Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 11, Lord Ramachandra Rules the World, text number 26. Asikta Margam Gandodai Karinam Mara Shikarai Swaminam Praptam Alokya Matam va sutaram iva. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. During the reign of Lord Ramachandra, the streets of the capital, Ayodhya, were sprinkled with perfumed water and drops of perfumed liquor, thrown about by elephants from their trunks. When the citizens saw the Lord personally supervising the affairs of the city in such opulence, they appreciated this opulence very much. Purport. We have simply heard about the opulence of Ram Raj during the reign of Lord Ramachandra. Now here is one example of the opulence of the Lord's kingdom. The streets of Ayodhya were not only cleaned, but also sprinkled with perfumed water and drops of perfumed liquor, which were distributed by elephants through their trunks. There is no need of sprinkling machines, for the elephant has a natural ability to suck water through its trunk and again throw it out in a shower. We can understand the opulence of the city from this one example. It was actually sprinkled with perfumed water. Moreover, the citizens had the opportunity to see the Lord personally supervising the affairs of the state. He was not a sleeping monarch, as we can understand from his activities in sending his brothers to see to affairs outside the capital and punish anyone who did not obey the emperor's orders. This is called Digvijaya. The citizens were all given facilities, peaceful life, and they were also qualified with appropriate attributes according to Varna and Ashram. As we have seen from the previous chapter, Varnashram Gunanvita, the citizens were trained according to the Varnashram system. Class of men were Brahmins, class of men were Kshatriyas, a class were Vaishyas, and a class were Shudras. Without this scientific division, there could be no question of good citizenship. The king, being magnanimous and perfect in his duty, performed many sacrifices and treated the citizens as his sons. And the citizens, being trained in the Varnashram system, were obedient and perfectly ordered. The entire monarchy was so opulent and peaceful that the government was even able to sprinkle the streets with perfumed water. What to speak of other management? Since the city was sprinkled with perfumed water, we can simply imagine how opulent it was in other respects. Why should the citizens not have felt happy during the reign of Lord Ramachandra? So the verse again. Asikta margam gandodai karinam mara shikarai swaminam praptam alokya matam vasutaram iva. During the reign of Lord Ramachandra, the streets of the capital, Ayodhya, were sprinkled with perfumed water and drops of perfumed liquor, thrown about by elephants from their trunks. When the citizens saw the Lord personally supervising the affairs of the city in such opulence, they appreciated this opulence very much. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutaye Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminte Namane Namaste Sarasvatundeve Gauravani Vracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatyade Satarane. Nice being back here in Dallas.
Welcome back.
Thank you. In this verse, it mentions how the citizens were peaceful during the reign of Lord Ramachandra. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Nashti buddhiya yuktasya nacha yuktasya bhavanaha nacha bhavintak shantira ashantasya kutak sukham. One who's not in transcendental or Krishna consciousness can have neither controlled mind nor steady intelligence, without which there's no possibility of peace. And how can there be any happiness without peace? We all know that our goal in life, and everyone's goal of life, is to become happy, to experience pleasure. And we want to know what is the method of experiencing as much pleasure as possible for as long as possible. But Krishna says, one secret to experiencing happiness perpetually is first one has to become peaceful. And the method of becoming peaceful is, according to Krishna, in this material world, is to follow the Vana and Ashram system. The Vana and Ashram system is not an end in itself. The end in itself is Krishna. But throughout Bhagavad Gita, we can find so many different verses where it explains how we can't be happy unless we're, first of all, peaceful. For instance, even in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna points out our problem, as Prahlad Maharaj has also pointed out our problem. The problem is that our problem tells us it's not a problem. Our problem is our minds. The problem is not really our mind. Our problem is that we take our mind too seriously. And therefore Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Udrar atmanatmanam atmanam avasarayat atmaiva yatmanoba buddhya atmaiva ripar atmanaha. That a person has to elevate himself by his own mind and not degrade himself. That the mind is the friend of the conditioned soul and his enemy as well. One who's conquered the mind is the best of friends, and for one who's failed to do so, the very mind will be the greatest enemy. For one who's conquered the mind, the super soul is already reached, for he has attained tranquility. To such a person, happiness and distress, honor and dishonor, heat and cold are all the same. In other words, as Prahlad Maharaj said, we don't really have any enemy. He was talking to his father, who he called best of the demons, Surya Varya Dehinam. Among all the demons, you're the best. I guess it was a compliment. If you're going to call someone a demon, you might as well call them the best of the demons. So he said to his father, my dear father, that you're a demon, and because you're a demon, you have a few problems. And one of your problems, he says, Sadasudu mudvigna diyama satkrihat. Your mind is always agitated by the impermanent. Your intelligence is bewildered by identifying yourself with the impermanent things. He asked, Tatsadu manye surya varya deinam sadasubu vigna diyama satkrahat. So anyone who's absorbed in the temporary, he's certainly going to be disturbed. See, you're disturbed. That's your problem, my dear father. You're not peaceful because you're absorbed in the temporary. So his advice was, Hidvatma pitam griham andukupam vano gato vanam gato vanam. Let's start that again. Vanam gato darim ashrieta. That you should go to get out of your blind well, your blind conception of identifying with yourself with the temporary, and go to Vrindavan and chant Hare Krishna. And he told his father, my dear father, you're imagining so many enemies, but actually there is no enemy except for the uncontrolled mind. So Vanashram is meant to help us ultimately to control our mind. Because the mind being filled with desires for either comfort, to make the body comfortable, or to protect the body from uncomfortable circumstances, there has to be some kind of regulation so that people will not be so uncomfortable that they can't make any spiritual advancement, and they can't be so fearful of the future that they can't think of the present. Generally, we're so fearful of the future, we don't think of the present, and we're so much disturbed by the past that we can't think of the present. And that's why our minds is not comfortable or peaceful. In other words, if we don't know if we're going to get anything to eat tomorrow, we're going to be a little disturbed. We're told, tomorrow there's going to be a fast, and for the next 3 years you're going to fast. I mean, it would be difficult enough. We just hear, well, you got to fast tomorrow. Then our minds becomes a little agitated. Then someone says, well, for 2 days, and it becomes really agitated. And then a week, and we're almost over we're completely bewildered. What to speak of, you're going to starve to death. And it's agitated by the past, lamenting. Oh, in the past, I tried so hard, I put in such an effort to do things right, to do things so I could come out on top, and right now I'm not on top, I'm on the bottom. So we're lamenting what my present circumstances are, and we're hankering for, we're fearful of what the future will bring, hoping it'll bring something better than the past. But Vanashram more or less fulfills our basic desires, because if we analyze Vanashram, it gives everyone something to eat. It assures that one that food is coming from rain, not from factories. It's coming from rain. And rain is not coming accidentally. It's coming from sacrifice. And sacrifices are, everyone has their sacrifice they're supposed to perform. You don't have to do everyone's work. You don't have to have 3 jobs in order to get a loaf of bread. You just have to do your work, participate, cooperate with everyone else, and the result is by this cooperation, and you do the right work, the right sacrifice, by which you get rain at the right time, in the right place. The result is you get food, and if you get food, most of your problem is solved. What to speak of the other more minor material problems, like the weather. Even if it's like here in Dallas, it's going to be raining for the next week. But, so no one goes out, no one's crying in the street, oh, it's raining. Because they know that at least they're going to get something to eat. But even if it's perfect sunlight, and the weather is perfect, but there was no food, everyone would be a little bit disturbed. So food is the real basic thing. Of course, as we find in the life of Dhruva Maharaj, he not only stopped eating food, he stopped drinking water, and then he stopped breathing. So we take these things for granted. Air and water, and therefore food becomes more or less the emphasis. But in modern society, as so-called progress goes on, even water is becoming a problem. And even in the future, air will become a problem, if it's not already a problem. Some, just like now, because of the oil spill in the Gulf, they're saying that methane is coming, or is going to come to the coast, or maybe even to Dallas, Texas. And so every breath of air, it's toxic. You'll only have 100 breaths of air, and that's it. So use them wisely. So that seems inconceivable. How can you talk about, we know that sometimes the air is not very clean because of the factories. What to speak of Kali Yuga, just like when one venomous serpent, Kaliya, was in the lake, Kaliya Lake of the Jamuna, then by his fumes that he was emanating, all the plants, the cowherd boys, the birds even died. They were flying overhead, and just by smelling the fumes, they fell into the lake and died. So there was one Kaliya 5,000 years ago, but now there have so many Kaliya serpents out there. They're digging those wells. They said that there's 20,000 wells or something out there in the middle of the Gulf that they don't know what's going on with them. So there was one Kaliya 5,000 years ago, and now they've created so many Kaliyas. In any case, these things are not, we take it for granted, but they're a good percentage of the world's population. They struggle to get one meal a day. What to speak of getting clean water or even fresh air. So this is civilization. Lord Ramachandra, his reign, because the citizens were performing sacrifice, because they knew what the goal of life was, they weren't, you know, concerned that our life would become better if we get an iPod or an iPad. That only if we get an iPad will life become complete. Therefore, we have to create a factory. Lord Ramachandra, he's behind the times, but we're more advanced. That what do we need this pure air, clean water, fresh food? We need an iPod. That's what we should concentrate on. So people become so bewildered, they're not concerned whether or not what the quality of their food is so much, the quality of the air. Some people are concerned, but not enough to do anything about it. Not enough people are concerned, and not enough people are focusing enough attention on it. They may protest, they may go out in the streets protesting against something, but usually they're just protesting that someone else will get an iPod, and I won't. That's their real protest. They're not protesting about the quality of the air, the quality of the water, the quality of people's consciousness, which is really the basic principle, that people should become submissive to the Supreme, that there is a Supreme, because that's where it all ends, and that he's given his instructions, and if we obey them, we get, Krishna says, then we get everything we need for at least peaceful, happy living. And if we don't do that, then he says, Stena, we become thieves. So people have missed the point. What's the problem? They think the problem in modern society is that they're not getting an opportunity to be free, that the federal government or someone is trying to take them over. So they'd rather be controlled by the state. But it's not the state that's going to control them. It's the head of this, you know, the different states. But if the head of the different states himself is simply directed by his senses and mind, his uncontrolled senses and mind, then how can he possibly direct the citizens? So it's not the president or the Congress or the governor. It's all people's uncontrolled minds because they don't know what the purpose of life is and how to achieve it. And therefore, who is ever going to direct society if they're fools and rascals? If they're killing animals, they're in taking intoxication, they're allowing uncontrolled senses in form of illicit sex and all kinds of sinful activities to go on, then the result is that everyone's going to be disturbed and even the necessities of life will not be provided, so people will never become happy or peaceful. But Lord Ramachandra was not such a foolish leader. He knew what the goal of life was, because he is the goal of life. It was easy for him. And therefore he created a society where people were happy and peaceful because they got all the necessities. They when they breathed the air, it wasn't foul, contaminated, full of toxins. It was like perfume. It says in the spiritual world, in that verse, Shriya Kanta Kanta Parama Purusha Kapataruvo, that the atmosphere there is full of spiritual bliss. When you breathe in, it's blissful. No one chokes from the fumes in the spiritual world. It's just every breath is pleasureful. You don't even have to learn pranayama there. It's so nice. Everyone is practicing pranayama eternally. So in this world, Lord Ramachandra, he provided so that the air was so fresh and beautiful that every breath was pleasurable. And he didn't have to create a machine to do it. The elephants were all around. Krishna has created a world which is already perfect. Just the elephants, you can utilize the elephants, which are also souls. Vidya Vinaya Sampane, Brahmani Gavi Hastini. Hastini, the soul and the elephant, can also be engaged in Krishna's service. And here they're doing the job by sprinkling water, scented water and scented perfume, and engaging all living entities in Krishna's service and making everyone blissful and encouraged to do their service to Krishna. The food was plentiful, the air was clean, the water was pure, everyone was peaceful, and they could worship very happily Lord Ramachandra, recognizing that he was the one who was providing all these necessities directly, and that ultimately he was controlling the entire universe. And therefore the goal of life was easily understood to surrender to Krishna, that he is the real benefactor, well-wisher, and object of sacrifice. Unfortunately, modern society, to get the most simple things, like, they're not even available. Everything is being technologically, well, so much technology to get things that could be done very much simpler. In other words, modern society has simply made everything unnecessarily complicated. And not only that, but they're proud of how complicated they made everything. And therefore, that's their problem. And what is the root cause of their problem? Is that they want to become God. They want to become the controller and the enjoyer, and they have no conception of how nice it is to become the servant of the real God and the real controller and enjoyer. Because they have no experience of how pleasurable it is to be the servant of Krishna, therefore they've taken it that we're going to find pleasure in becoming antagonistic towards Krishna in the form of serving these material mind and senses. They don't realize it's simply a rebellious attitude. Because of their rebellious attitude towards Krishna, they're being forced to serve their mind and senses. And because they don't know how to properly serve their mind and senses, because they don't take shelter of Krishna, therefore they go to the darkest regions of existence and have to suffer life after life, thinking that they're advancing. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam is essential so we can understand things as they actually are, and if we understand it practically, so we can live life in a practical manner in sacrifice to Krishna according to our circumstances, then one day we may get some elephants in Dallas and they may sprinkle the streets of Dallas with perfumed water. But that may take a little while. In the meantime, we should just chant Hare Krishna. And try to distribute Prabhupada's books, try to give people just practical knowledge of how to live in the material world, not to create disturbance unnecessarily, so that they have the capacity to hear the holy name and take advantage of it. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions, comments? Yes.
You've been talking about how all the necessities of life are all originally coming from the Lord. So the atmosphere is so atheistic out there. How do we get people to the point where we're appreciating that all their everything, air and all, is coming from God?
Give them some prasadam. Chant Hare Krishna. And for the rare person, you know, tell them, how is it possible that the sun's rising at its appointed time and the sun's setting at its appointed time every day? Even a scientist who thinks that they have so much intelligence, they can't create even a watch which is as accurate as the sun. So with all their intelligence, if they can't create a watch which is as accurate as the sun, how can we say that the sun has come about by accident? It must have come about by a supreme intelligence. How can we eat food? That food is being assimilated, being digested, assimilated, and the unnecessary parts being eliminated. Who could create such a machine? Only the most supreme intelligent scientists. We have no conception how this wonderful machine we call the body is actually working. Therefore, it must be created by a supremely intelligent scientist. Therefore, the supreme scientist's creation and marvelous creations are all around us. We just have to open people's eyes to see it. In other words, if people could just listen, then they'll be able to see. But unfortunately, they've been trained up how to not to listen to reality. They've been focused in on their football team, as if that's the highest expression of reality. Yes.
The streets were sprinkled with perfumed water and drops of perfumed liquor. Was that liquor to preserve the perfume, or was it liquor?
I guess the elephants like the liquor, in case they got paid. When because sometimes, a lot of times, it mentions how the elephants become intoxicated by the liquor. So I guess it's all right for the elephant to drink the liquor. He doesn't have to follow all the regular principles. But the other side, you know, I don't know if liquor preserves does it preserve things? Is it more difficult to evaporate liquor than water? I don't know. If you throw liquor on the ground, does it take longer to dry up? I'm not very... What's that? Okay, well, I'm sure that's one of the reasons also.
I was going to say, in the manufacture of perfume, they take the essential oils and mix it with alcohol to make the actual perfume.
Yeah.
So that's one of the ways of making scented, you know.
Preserves.
But alcohol, of course, when they put alcohol on the skin, it immediately evaporates sometimes. Oh, for the oil. Okay, so that's good. Just more than just getting the elephants drunk, I guess there was some other purpose. I'm sure when the elephant's drunk, it's easier to handle him, though. He gets... Anything else?
Because with all those horses and elephants, they needed the little scented water out.
Probably. But of course, I think people got used to that smell rather than this. Now we're used to the smell of the automobiles. As I mentioned, at the beginning of the 1900s, the Ford Motor Company sent out an advertisement all around America that you should buy, that the horses are on the road and they're passing stool all over the road and contaminating the road. So in order to prevent this contamination, you should buy a car. So they've ended the horse pollution problem. But I think if you breathe in horse dung, it's not quite as poisonous as bringing, you know, carbon dioxide and other things from the cars. Okay, thank you very much. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande Hari Bol.